Welcome to Move the Needle. This show is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy-provided immunization services. Let's start moving the needle.
Well, hello, and welcome to this episode of the Move the Needle podcast. I'm Ed Cohen, Executive Vice President of Pharmacy Advocacy at Pharmacy Times. Join with me today is my good friend, John Beckner, and a special guest, which John will introduce in just a moment. So good morning, John.
Good morning, Ed. It's really good to be with you today. And it's my pleasure to introduce our guest who probably really needs no introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. Our guest is Mitch Rotholtz. Mitch is a pharmacist currently serving as Chief of Governance and State Affiliates for the American Pharmacists Association, and he's also Executive Director of the APHA Foundation. Mitch is a globally recognized expert on pharmacy-based immunization delivery. He's worked over the past 28 years on projects involving collaboration among pharmacists, physicians, and other healthcare professionals, leading to improved patient care outcomes, and has worked with immunization stakeholders on the creation and implementation of immunization neighborhoods. During COVID, he's been an active member of numerous task force and work groups, including being co-chair of the ASTO APHA National Association COVID Vaccine Leadership Council. He's also been a member of the leadership team for a pharmacy in his community that's led to the administration of over 70,000 COVID-19 vaccinations. And I know Mitch has been very busy, but that last fact that I shared, he's probably the most proud of. Mitch, it's great to have you with us today.
Thanks, John, and thanks, Ed, for having me with you.
We've had a lot going on with regard to recent news about pediatrics, so I'm going to let you lead into your discussion of that, and obviously interested in hearing what Mitch has to say about that.
Well, first and foremost, John, great intro to Mitch, and Mitch, you are a star in a true champion and a star for all of pharmacy. So my pleasure to have you here today, as John has stated. But John, you need to do a intro of yourself too, my friend.
Well, Ed, I'll do a brief intro. I'm John Beckner. I'm Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives for the National Community Pharmacists Association. We represent the owners and managers of roughly 20,000 independent community pharmacies across the country. I've been actively involved in immunizations for a long time, and Mitch has been a great mentor to me, and certainly appreciate his leadership in that space over the years.
All right, thank you, John. So, and Mitch, please feel free to chime in on any of these topics. And what we're going to do is spend the first half of our discussion today talking a little bit about the new COVID doses for pediatrics. And then the second half, we'd like to dig a little deeper into some of your accomplishments and what got all of us, especially John and I, to this point in our careers, focused so much on immunization. So
if I could just add to what John and you have said, because I'm really honored to be on this podcast with the both of you, because when I started under this road, you two were innovators, and I couldn't do what I have been able to do in my career without having folks like you and John working side by side with me and being the pioneers of implementation. So I want the audience to recognize that you both have been on this journey with me the whole time.
Yes, we have. John and I joke a lot about the number of years of immunization history we have, hands-on experience, and I think between the two of us, well, separate from you, Mitch, but the two of us, probably the three of us, have about 100 years of experience here. So we're all aging ourselves with that number, but
thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Ed.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mitch, you come on board, you know, you gotta be ready for anything. We're hearing a lot of news about COVID doses for not only the 6 month to 5 year olds, but also for the older children as well. And there's new guidance. There's angst by parents across the communities everywhere. We're hearing that potentially 1 in 5 parents would take their child to be immunized for COVID in the under 5 years of age group. And then of course, pharmacists, we can only provide immunizations based on two facts today. Of course, the PrEP Act gives us the ability to shoot down to 3 years of age. But then if that does or is allowed to expire, then we go back to state, individual state privilege. And that could change things in a moment as well. And John, what are you thinking about that statistic that parents have a lot of angst? And Mitch, what kind of advice can we give pharmacists to help them to soothe some of this anxiety that parents have?
And you bring up some really good points. And I think what we've learned through COVID is that this is a long haul. And as we've seen in every situation where the recommendations have changed, there are those individuals who are going to be there calling right away, even before we get the final sign off, you know, asking when they can get themselves or their children vaccinated. So that's what we're seeing now in a lot of communities where the parents are, who have been waiting for this, coming in and getting their vaccine. In my own community, as soon as we got the sign off from the CDC director, the phones were going off the hook, appointments were being made, and shots were being put in arms. But in the situation here, you know, pharmacy plays a major role in that the public has become used to going to the pharmacy to get themselves and their older children vaccinated. And they're gonna come back to the pharmacy because they've gotten used to that relationship to either get their child vaccinated or get information. But as any parent, we're gonna be more conservative with our own kids, and we're gonna be looking for answers to questions we may have. And so as pharmacists, we can be important sources of credible information, because there's a lot of information out there in social media that is incorrect. But we need to make sure that we're providing evidence-based information that's coming out of the CDC and other expert organizations and individuals, so that we could reinforce a consistent message. And we're also in what I've started terming, you know, it's not vaccine hesitancy. It's what I'm calling vaccine contemplation. Because individuals, parents are not anti-vaccine, but they are looking for more information. So just because somebody asks a question doesn't mean that they are anti-vaccine. It means they're looking for the answers that will give them the comfort level of moving forward. And that's what we as pharmacists can play an important role at, because we are accessible. We're not trying to disrupt the medical home. We're trying to complement and supplement it. And so as the PrEP Act also says, when you're vaccinating children, you need to remind the parents the importance of having that well child visit. And so that's where the collaboration goes into play. And then as Ed talked about with the under three, you know, if you can't do the kids under three, and we'll talk more about the PrEP Act limitations and opportunities, but if you're not going to do kids, you could serve as a resource and a referral to those practitioners who can do that, as well as you can collaborate with your pediatricians and family practitioners and public health in your community to coordinate who's doing the vaccines, and even do joint clinics. In my own community, we're setting up doing a joint clinic with the pediatricians in our area. So where they'll do the under three, our pharmacy can do the three and above along with them as well. So again, increasing access, consistency in messaging.
Mitch, I'm really glad you brought out the point about collaboration. You know, a lot has been made, particularly over the last 2 years regarding, I guess, turf issues, for lack of a better word, between pharmacists and physicians. And you know, when you think about it, this, you know, you mentioned the joint clinics and, you know, being a source of referral, you know, this is really an opportunity to collaborate and build those relationships that may have been difficult to build in the past.
So let me just add a quick question here. In the chain world, of course, with many of the chains having their own clinics with nurse practitioners, they could use the nurse practitioner to supplement those immunizations for children as well. So we're seeing a lot of that. But Mitch, yeah, going back to your point on the contemplation issue, pharmacy has shined over the last 2+ years, and we've done a great job. Today, however, I'm concerned that as folks are contemplating, they're doing so at home, and how are we as pharmacy and pharmacists, how can we get to those folks that are not coming in to the stores, or we're not able to reach them, and to put that contemplation to ease and get them to embrace the immunizations?
Great question, Ed. And I think, you know, using the information resources that organizations like APHA and NCPA and NASPA and other organizations are putting together for their members and for the profession in general to use with the public, you know, putting that through your social media networks, doing messaging out to your patient population, signage in your pharmacy, those all help the public understand that you're there if they have a question, but also delivering consistent messages. Talk to your public health department. What is their message? What are they wanting to communicate out to the community, and help amplify it? You know, one point I want to also bring up, guys, is the stance that we've been taking in this area of childhood vaccinations is that, just like any healthcare practitioner, we don't want a practitioner to do something that they're not comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So that discussion needs to happen between the pharmacy team members and management as they're putting out information about what vaccination ages that practice will administer vaccines. Because again, just like we don't want to see a physician or a nurse or any other practitioner do something out of their comfort level, the same thing is in pharmacy. And you're seeing that occur in as pharmacies are putting out information to the public about what ages they will vaccinate. Those discussions are occurring. And your point about working in the bigger pharmacies where you've got a convenient care clinic, that is the strategy that they're going to use as well. They could do under 3 in those situations. So let them take care of that. The pharmacist could take care of the other ages. But we need collaboration and coordination and messaging. So we're all working together, delivering the same messaging.
Mitch, do you, you know, one of the discussion points has been the fact that many parents will still be more comfortable taking their child to the pediatrician's office. What do you think the opportunity here is with the younger children? Do you think you know, most parents are going to defer to the pediatrician, or do you think they're going to take advantage of the convenience and accessibility and bring their child to the pharmacy?
I wish I had a crystal ball to tell you exactly, John, but from parents I've talked to, it's going to be where they have a comfort level. And the other thing that's happening is how easy is it to get into some locations? And convenience is also becoming a factor as people are deciding where to get themselves and their child vaccinated. So it's that relationship. I've seen pharmacists who are doing an awesome job with younger ages. Again, it's that comfort level. It's setting it up. It's making it comfortable and inviting to the parent and the child. So it's really an individual practice and practitioner approach and ability and willingness that really comes into play here. But again, if a parent wants to go to the pediatrician, we should be supportive of that. Our goal is a public health goal. Doesn't matter where they get it, as long as they get it. And that should be our focus. And that's the whole concept of the immunization neighborhood that we created back in 2012.
Yeah, and I think we're going to, given credit where credit's due, I think you coined that expression. And I think you really were a visionary back then in talking about the immunization neighborhood. And, you know, it's really about involving, you know, all practitioners, including, you know, public health in this initiative.
Yep. I was the face of it, but it was a lot of discussions with people inside of pharmacy and outside of pharmacy that really helped me really crystallize it. And it really took us until the pandemic to really see it in action. You know, a lot of times I would get asked, well, tell us more about the neighborhood. What does it look like? And I can just conceptually tell what we intended for it to do, but we really saw it in play in COVID. And in my own community was a good example. When we were doing the clinics, it was not just pharmacy working. My co-lead on the team was a nurse practitioner. And then we had physicians, we had other pharmacists, we had non-medical folks, we had a whole bunch of people in the community working side by side, again, implementing the three C's: collaboration, coordination, and communication. You could take the immunization neighborhood concept to any disease state and approach to healthcare, and we could use it in any of those situations. And that's where the healthcare system, you know, my vision needs to go, is it that we be patient-centered. It's not a medical home, it's a patient home. And who's serving the needs of the patients and coordinating that effort so we meet common goals for that patient.
So let's change gears a little bit, Mitch, and Ed, I'd love for you to comment as well. But, you know, preparations are in full swing for the upcoming flu season. What do you think we'll see this year in terms of interest in getting a flu shot? Do you think there's going to be a heightened interest, or do you think there's going to be less interest? I've heard a number of concerns that, you know, with all the focus on COVID, that you know, we're going to become a little bit complacent about the need for a seasonal flu shot. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, we've seen both scenarios over the last 2 years, where 2 years ago there was record uptake of flu vaccine, and because we had all social distance and worn masks last year, there was minimal flu. So when it was time for the flu season, there wasn't as robust of uptake last year, I believe, than we saw the year before. This year, we're hearing that in the Southern Hemisphere, flu is rampant, and that the demand for flu vaccine and immunizations is again soaring to respond to the outbreak of flu we're seeing in the other side of the earth. If that holds true, then we could have record flu coming our way, and we'll need to truly promote, make folks aware, and get people to get their flu shot. And it echoes in my head hearing Mitch speak that, you know, everyone 6 months of age and older, everyone needs a flu shot and should get a flu shot, no exceptions. So that always echoes. And when it's flu season, I hear that in the back of my head all the time, this little Mitch yelling and screaming. But on that note, you know, it flu season used to be kind of like a restart of immunizations for the pharmacy for the year. And we've seen now two consecutive years of ongoing nonstop immunization practices. So I'm just hoping that we can refocus, re-energize not only our staff, but also our patients to embrace yet another immunization.
So to add to what Ed said, and he's absolutely right, 2 years ago when we didn't have COVID vaccine yet, our message to the public was the one thing you can do for yourself was get your flu shot and at least protect yourself from a vaccine preventable disease. With the social distancing and masks, absolutely. And we saw less cases being reported, and we all saw it. As soon as the masks came off, respiratory illnesses were going up. It's just shouldn't have been a surprise, as we were being more cautious about infectious diseases that we did see a lower rate, but we're starting to see it tick up. And we're going to see a flu season, as Ed said, that'll be higher than the previous year. The other thing to keep in mind, too, and this is an opportunity that will become, you know, nothing has been finalized in terms of another fall COVID vaccine. But if I had my crystal ball in front of me, my prediction is we're going to see a COVID fall vaccination recommendation. And so, again, that's going to be another vaccine. But at the same time, you know, there's nothing in any of the recommendations or the clinical science that says you cannot co-administer. So if we're going to be given shots and it's during flu season, we need to be also offering the flu vaccine and particularly pay attention to the type of flu vaccines this year. And for those that are over 65, either getting a high dose or attenuated vaccine, differentiating the vaccine that the more senior people, and I'm not going to say elderly because I'm getting up there myself. So the more senior people need to
get, I appreciate that.
Get that vaccine. And that's important because I think as professionals, as well as the public, everybody is vaccine fatigued. And we, unfortunately, I would love to say, okay, we're having a month of July is going to be a quiet time. Everybody re-energize, but that's not the case, unfortunately. As these infectious diseases are flowing in our communities, we don't have the luxury of taking a break. And so we want to manage it. And so as we're looking at moving out of COVID, we're trying to do co-administration of other needed vaccines that people have put to the side. We'll be having, you know, getting ready for school again. So those things, is, you know, we need to start as healthcare providers, start sensitizing the public and trying to help them get caught up so that they're not trying to get everything done at once. And in our own practices, you know, some practices have gone ahead and started back with all the recommended vaccines. That's great if they've got the ability for resources and manpower and willingness to do that. But if you don't have those resources available and staffing, but you want to start putting in place some of those other vaccinations, pick a priority one and start getting back into that where you can. So we don't want to overwhelm the teams, but we need to start thinking about more than just COVID protection.
And I think, you know, from a workflow standpoint, and I think your point about, burnout or vaccine fatigue is certainly a valid one, and we're going to continue to have to deal with that challenge. But you know, from a workflow standpoint, it certainly makes sense if somebody is coming to the pharmacy for a COVID vaccine that you go ahead and offer the seasonal flu vaccine at the same time. And like you said, co-administration is certainly not a problem, and really we should take advantage of, you know, the captive audience there.
And again, Mitch, to your earlier point, communication, messaging by pharmacies using their social media, signage, and word of mouth to get information to their patients that it is flu season. So if you're leading with flu or you're leading with COVID, the message should always be to co-administer another needed vaccine.
Yeah, and Ed, I think, and this goes to the audience that's listening to this podcast. You know, I think members of the pharmacy team, pharmacists and other members, technicians and student and interns, underestimate our value and influence. And I just want to say to this audience, thank you for all you're doing for your patients and communities, because you are effective. You are valued, and people do listen to what you say. So I don't want you to feel like that you're being undervalued, even though in the advocacy policy realm, we're still fighting for some of those recognitions. We are getting recognized. Your work is getting recognized. We just need to get it codified.
Couldn't have said it better. Thank you, Mitch. So in the remaining time that we have, I wanted to engage you, Mitch, in a little conversation about, and I know it's not always easy to talk about yourself, but we'd like to focus a few minutes just on Mitch Rothhold, the true pharmacy and true immunization champion. And then my question is, go back 25 years and how did this all, like, how did you, you didn't just wake up one morning and say, pharmacists need to immunize. This had to be something that was on people's mind. Where did this come from? How did it evolve? How did you get involved? And how did you then take it to such an enormously successful level?
Well, yeah, I've been doing a lot of that contemplation in my mind because I'm going through a transition in my career. And I at the risk of leaving somebody out, I'll just mention a couple of folks who really positioned me to be able to represent the profession. And that's the thing. It wasn't me. I was blessed being put in a position where I could be the spokesperson for the profession, and working with a group of individuals like both of you on this call and other folks like John Gravenstein, Michael Hoag, Steve Foster. We're all a team, you know, Liz Keys, James Appleby, David Schulke. We're all people in the early days that we all saw the vision and said, this is what pharmacists could do. And Lucinda May was also part of that group as well. And where this came out of was really a discussion that John Gans and Lucinda Maine were in with the Secretary of HHS back then, Donna Shalala. And there was, as a nation, we were really struggling with our childhood vaccination rates. And in that meeting, Secretary Shalala turned to Dr. Gans and said, can pharmacists help? And him being a visionary as well, came back to the team and said, what can we do? And at the same time, we also were working and had discussions going on with John Gravenstein, who was in the Army actually during that time. And he also had a vision for vaccinations. And we had some states, early adopter states, who were doing some work that we spent some time learning what they were doing, what their challenges are, where they needed assistance. For example, the state of Washington was one of the first states to be doing that. State of Georgia was another early state that we worked with in putting together, analyzing what they were doing, what their needs were, what the opportunities were. We took all of that and put together a process. And with David Schulke, who was on our government affairs staff at that time, and some of you remember what now was CMS, was HCFA, we looked at what the payment systems for vaccinations were and saw that there was a payment mechanism that we could tap into. And David did a lot of groundwork of working for the interpretation of the regulations at that time, and saw that pharmacists could be recognized under Medicare Part B like boy, like any other immunization provider. And so we got HCFA at that time to agree that pharmacists could be paid to do flu and pneumococcal vaccination. And so we developed the certificate training program that's been in place now for over 25 years. That really was, you know, it's great we do the training program, but you have to have the carry through as well. And through, we had the training program, but we also had a pull through by having a mechanism for pharmacists to get paid. And it just wasn't even just Medicare for payment. We also got private payers and patients willing to pay for it out of their pocket. And so all those really came together that then pulled the movement forward. But even before we started down this route, we probably had a dozen states where we had the authority as pharmacists to administer, but we never took advantage of it. And so we started reaching out to public health departments through our state affiliates. We started getting involved in immunization coalitions where pharmacists were coming to those meetings, not just to pick the low-hanging fruit, but to become part of the immunization infrastructure in those states and communities, so that we weren't seen of just trying to take money out of the system, but really bring value and access into the system. And that then led to us getting spokespersons outside of pharmacy to be our spokespersons. And so it got to a point where my first meetings, and I did a lot of work reaching out outside of the profession, developing relationships with individuals in medicine and public health and other decision makers, to today we're not just colleagues, we're friends. And so I knew we were getting there when I was at meetings and I wasn't the only one speaking on behalf of pharmacy. Physicians, public health folks were speaking up for pharmacy. We need to engage pharmacists. We need to ask pharmacists if they can help. We need to get pharmacists recognized. And that also helped that states were moving the authority forward at the state level. So it was a lot of different things, Ed, that kind of gave me the opportunities, but I just took the great work that pharmacists were doing at the grassroots level and amplifying it. And those examples are what helped us make the case for that recognition.
Well, besides immunizations, you've accomplished so much more in your career. Your full career, as you said, you're starting the transition, your full career with APHA, and outside of immunizations, you've also been a champion for pharmacy and advanced our profession just amazingly as that spokesperson. But again, you have to have that passion and that vision to be the spokesperson, to step into that role. You have always been a true believer, and it's infectious because John and I have talked on many of our podcasts about our passion and our belief in pharmacist provided services and pharmacist provided immunizations, where it, you know, we're just glad to have you here to share that with you and share with our audience and maybe some of those other accomplishments that you're would like to boast about in the remaining few minutes we have today.
Wow. It's been 40 years of working on behalf of the profession. And, you know, when I came into pharmacy, I came in with the desire to want to make a difference. And I've been blessed having great mentors who've given me that opportunity to do that. And my work's not done. While I'm not going to be on full-time staff at APHA, my passions and those who've worked with me and know that I can't sit still. So I will be still trying to help support movement of the profession. So keep involved in pharmacy issues, keep involved in immunizations. And then the other passion that I also have is the disability community. I have an 11-year-old son with Down syndrome who really changed my life and my perspective, and looking for how his opportunities could be optimized and things that we as healthcare practitioners can help individuals, whether they have disabilities or they don't have access to care. Those are the folks that need a voice. And so I'm going to continue to be that voice and ensure that everybody has access to needed care and resources out there. So I'm not going away. I'm just going to get more control of my time and focus that opportunity. So we still have a lot more work to do on behalf of our patients, our communities, and our profession. And I'm a strong believer in what pharmacists can do and want to see us optimized in the healthcare system.
So Mitch, we've really accomplished a lot over the last couple of years, particularly in the immunization space. So I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and give us your thoughts on what you think lies ahead. What do we as pharmacists need to focus on moving forward in a post-COVID environment?
Great question, John. And the way I'm looking at it is that there's not going to be less opportunities. There's going to be more opportunities for a pharmacy and the pharmacy teams to play a role, not just in immunizations, but in helping our communities deal with public health issues, whether it be disease or safety. And I think that's going to be an important part for us in looking forward. But one of the things I'd like to challenge the audience to think about and to engage in is that we really have to look at the value of community-based healthcare providers and the sustainability of those providers, whether they be pharmacy, medicine, or public health. If we continue to go down the path that we were seeing before COVID and during COVID, that the sustainability of these providers and access of these providers will be jeopardized. that's why all of our organizations are working towards addressing the PBM issues, the DIR fee issues, ensuring that there's adequate aligned incentives and reimbursement to support those practices, that we're looking at our manpower and what support do our manpower folks need, because without humans, healthcare delivery is local. We need bodies to be accessible and to be enjoying the work that they're doing. Because when the next pandemic comes, we can't depend upon bringing people outside of communities to serve those community needs. We need to think ahead, and as a nation, value prevention and value public health, and to support providers so they're there in those emergencies when we need them. That's the message we need to really start hitting home to our public decision makers, and that don't take us for granted. Our value is value, patient access, and the skills that we bring to healthcare. That's what we need to reiterate and keep pushing until we get the systems in place.
Well, we certainly hope you're going to continue to be an advocate for that. You've been a very articulate advocate for, you know, pharmacist involvement or engagement as part of the healthcare team over the years. And, you know, as you transition, it's my hope that you're going to continue to do that, because you do such a good job of it.
Thanks, John. I'm looking forward to continue to work with both you and Ed, as well as everyone else in the profession and outside of the profession, on behalf of our patients and our communities.
Well, thank you so much, Mitch, for joining us today on this podcast. John, it's always a pleasure to join you and be able to put together our podcast. I'm proud to call both of you my friend and my colleague. And I want to thank both of you again and our listening audience for joining this episode of Move the Needle Podcast. And please join us again next month when we come back with the next episode of Move the Needle Podcast. Thank you.